Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
Hey, it's Sabrina Cognata. Hold on to your bodily fluids. You're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from Knott's Berry Farm.
Knott's Berry Farm is a huge amusement park.
It's a huge amusement
with
park.
With the Charles Schulz Peanuts Gang theme,
they
which
do.
I like.
They do. And apparently there was, at one time, an actual farm.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a real berry farm where they invented, I believe, the boysenberry?
Really?
No, they is it the boysenberry that they crossbred a couple of different berries and literally created a new berry?
It wasn't invented there, but it was about to go. They basically, the research.
Andrew Steven, our sound engineer, he pipes up with some good information about
Native Californians have way too much information about Knott's Berry Farm.
He says that they didn't actually invent the boysenberry, but they created there? What? Somebody named Boysen
invented
the berry.
But then it stopped being popular. It almost went extinct. And then when the Knott family came in, they sort of founded and recultivated and had this big resurgence.
Andrew Steven
and
giving
yet
us.
And we're talking about nice, healthy, wonderful things to eat, but our topic is
bodily fluids.
Yes, and we're coming here because all theme parks are awash with bodily fluids that you don't want to know about.
You know, that really does make me
tens of thousands of people. How many people are throwing up?
Yeah.
How many people are missing the toilet?
And their sweat.
How many people are telling their five-year-old child, their son, hey, I don't know where the bathroom is. Go ahead and pee on that tree.
Yeah.
Dozens, I can tell you from personal experience.
Well, you know, recently I took my daughter to Raging Waters, which is a water park theme park.
Oh, God.
And all the brownies.
Yeah.
And I'm floating down the lazy river, and there's like Band-Aids floating by.
Oh, that's not good. No, all I can think
like
of is the South Park episode where the urine level at the water park gets to be so high it's over 51%,
yeah,
and it causes a giant tropical tsunami of urine. That's all I would be thinking about.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
well,
yeah, there's scabby children who didn't wipe their ass properly floating around in the water.
There's,
and you're like,
fecal matter in every public swimming pool. But you have to understand, chlorine knocks that shit right out. You know what I mean? Literally. I mean, there's chlorine. That's why they put the chemicals in the water. So don't worry about that. I mean, seriously, if somebody pees or has something, some of their bodily fluids comes out in the water, there are chemicals that are activating against that.
Yes, yes.
I mean,
I don't care.
All right, here's
That's like saying, hey, I'm going to pee on you, but it's okay because I'm going to spray chemicals on you immediately afterwards.
Yeah, here's a Lysol wipe, and I'm going to pee on you and then wipe it off your stomach.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
At best.
All right, we're talking about bodily fluids because our guest tonight, Sabrina Cognata, she brings forth the topic. As you know, Hannes, on Storyworthy, we don't dictate what people need to
talk about.
They talk about anything they want to talk about.
Yeah, we didn't say, you know what we need, a bodily fluid story. Let's find somebody with one.
Yeah, no, we didn't do that. But Sabrina Cognata, now she did the Storyworthy Hour of Truth, the live show that we do here in Hollywood at Iowa West. And when I saw her on that show, I thought, this girl is interesting. She's got a lot going on.
She's a powerhouse.
She's a powerhouse of information, but there's something through her. There's a lot of anger, I think, maybe happening, but there's also like an honesty and a sweetness about her. So that's why I brought her on the show tonight, and I'm anxious to hear her story about bodily fluids. Now, yeah, when I think of bodily fluids, I think about, you know, vomit, of course.
Yes.
And when I was a flight attendant, there were people who would be barfing on the plane, right? That's why you got the sickness bag or whatever.
Yeah.
And I would be the flight attendant who has to walk through the cabin with a trash bag saying, you know, garbage, garbage. And then people are handing you their fluids in, like, you know, yeah, they're putting their vomit in a bag in the bag I'm holding.
Yeah. See, I only have to go on the radio and say there's a code, whatever our code is.
Code poo-poo, something like that?
That is not the code. That is not the code is supposed to be so you hear things on the radio, you don't know what you're talking about if you're a civilian.
Code, 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 code poo-poo down at Jurassic Park. Doesn't that happen?
No, no. I heard a story once that somebody at some theme park, when there it was vomit, the person didn't know whatever that park's code was for vomit, so they thought they'd be clever and called in a code yellow, which turned out to be that park's code for a bomb threat.
Oh, shit.
So that caused some problems.
Yeah, right. That's not the right code.
That is the wrong
code. Well, here's what would happen as a flight attendant. We would have, if somebody puked in the aisle or if somebody puked in their seat, which happens, and, you know, the airline seat,
of course. Oh, my God, and I'm sitting in these seats. How did I never think of that before?
Oh, my gosh. You don't even believe what goes on in a plane.
Ugh.
And so what we would have is these little bags that look like sand. I can't remember what it was called now, but you would sprinkle it over the mess.
Yeah,
and
the
then
famous
it would
janitor.
How do you congregate.
Coagulate.
Ooh, gross. It's
it actually
true.
Does sound bad.
It would coagulate, and then we would be able to scoop it in a better fashion.
That technology
fashion
has not changed in about 100 years.
Now, here's where I've seen a lot of vomit on the plane is with children who puke in their seat, and they don't get the bag out in time.
Yeah.
So now there's puke on the airline seat. So what would we do is we would try to move them to a clean seat. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
But nowadays they fly with all full planes. They barely let the plane go off the ground unless it's full. But if there would be a seat empty, we would move them to that seat. And then when we would land, the cleaners would come on and we would say, you know, clean up in row 27, you know. And they would take the airline seats, the covers, off of the seat.
Oh, just the cover, but they'd leave the
cover. Well, they got to leave the seat, Hannes.
Yeah,
it's bolted to the
floor. Okay, I see what you're saying.
And then they'd put a new airline on there.
Yeah. No, it occurred to me, the bottom of your seat can be a flotation device. That means you could take
the whole seat, the bottom, the cushion comes off.
Cushion comes off,
Well, they would probably take that whole
thing
the
off. Okay, the cushion, as long as they take away. I don't want the styrofoam that was under.
But let me tell you something. If you walk around on a plane barefoot, you are cheating death.
Yeah.
Because what is on the floor of the airplane is absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where I've seen all sorts of things. I mean, not just food and beverages, but like I said, vomit and emergency
probably
situations.
Probably Band-Aids.
Band-Aids, things like that.
Scabs.
Well, it's about time we cover bodily fluids. That's all I'm saying.
And we need to cover them in that sand, which is like cat litter, so then you can scoop it up a little later.
It is like cat litter,
stuff. No, I think it probably is cat litter,
Yeah,
quite frankly.
Like absorbs moisture.
Yeah, exactly, and turns into a clump. I've become, three cats that I am dad to, it's like I've become more immune to turds and urine than I used to be. Also, cat vomit.
Yeah.
You know, when you first move in, you're like, cat vomit, I got to clean it up immediately.
Are you talking about a hairball or a cat vomit?
No, I'm talking about cat vomit because they just vomit all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'll pile of cat vomit and I'll think, I have to logistically, where is it? Is it in the heavy traffic zone or is it behind the couch where I can get it later?
Oh, my gosh.
If it's behind the couch, I'm going to get it later.
I have never considered knowing there's vomit on the floor or poop on the floor in my apartment and thought I will get it later.
Poop is not a thing. But vomit, first of all, you got to let the vomit coagulate. Yeah, you heard me.
But are you talking about a hairball or vomit?
No, I'm talking about they ate a bunch of kibble, decided, oh, wait, I'm not hungry, and vomited up whole pellets of kibble.
And you've let that sit.
Well, you don't want to pick it up when it's warm.
Oh, my gosh. I just don't know. I just don't know why Sabrina had to bring this topic forth.
I don't know. Thanks. Thanks, Obama.
Okay. That's how the terrorists win, you know.
Yeah, right.
All right, listen,
your bodily fluids are disgusting. You should wear a veil to cover the fluids.
Before we bring on our storyteller tonight, I did want to mention that if you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast, there are so many very simple things
you can do.
You
probably don't want to at this point. But
no, but if you could... If you could, the first thing you can do, which helps us tremendously, is to just tell a friend.
Yes.
I listen to the Storyworthy podcast. What is a podcast? Well, it's this way you can listen to the radio for free and hear people say interesting things. That's what it is.
And you can go back and forth just like on TV where you can I want to hear that again. You go back.
Right, exactly.
I don't want to hear
so
that.
It's not live. There's an ability to move back and forth and you can binge listen to Storyworthy or just listen to one every week.
Here's what's going to happen. Somebody's going to tell their friend to listen to Storyworthy and this is the episode they're going to land on. Because I used to say to people when Howard Stern was on regular radio, I'd be like, and people are like, he's gross. It's like, no, you got to listen. He's very funny.
Yeah.
You know, occasionally he might go over a line, but I mean, this is a smart, funny man. And the instant they would turn on the radio, he'd be like, two lesbians are dildoing each other.
Right.
you would never turn on when he was doing political commentary.
Right.
It would always be something.
So what Hannes is saying is don't just listen to one episode
don't
of Story
listen
Worthy.
To the, yeah.
Give if, yourself 3 to 5,
yeah, don't,
before
don't
you
Don't send
judge
him the
us.
Link to bodily fluids. Send them to link to We Like the Pope, something, anything, not bodily fluids.
And also, folks, you can find us over at Twitter at StoryWorthy and on Instagram at StoryWorthy and, of course, over at StoryWorthyPodcast.com. And, of course, the other thing you can do is to buy my book. How about that, Hannes?
Pit to LAX, My
Story-Worthy
Life.
That's right, folks. Buy that book. I'll sign it for you personally, and I will send it to you. You can find it over at StoryWorthyMedia.com or StoryWorthyPodcast.com. All right, you guys, wherever you are, stick around. Hold on to your bodily fluids, because Sabrina Cognata is on her way. Next time on Story-Worthy, we have comedian John Reap.
That's right, and I'll be talking about bad dad decisions in the pool.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
Yo, what's up? This is Pauly Shore, and you are listening to Storyworthy, so do not go anywhere.
That's it?
Totally.
You have nothing else to say?
No, I have nothing else to say. I have nothing else
that
to say.
That is the first time we've ever come back, and Hannes just said, and we're back.
I know. Well, it's the first time for everything.
All right, you guys. Sabrina Cognata is here right now, and she's a writer and a storyteller. And here's something about her, Hannes.
Mm-hmm.
She's from Los Angeles.
What? She's the one.
She's the one. What
Somebody
the?
Had to be.
Now, she has written for the Huffington Post and TMZ Magazine, and she has started an internet project, like I mentioned before, which I'm very fascinated about. It's called Decoupage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not decoupage.
Yeah, that's the first thing when I looked her up, and that's the first thing I thought was like, oh, this picture, a dick pic, okay. And then I'm scrolling, another one. And I'm
that's
just
right.
waiting for Sherry to come up behind me like, what are you looking at?
It's like a scrapbook of dicks. That's what it is.
It is.
It's like scrapbooking for penises.
Yeah, everyone that I've ever talked about this who has a cell phone has gotten dozens of dick pics that she never asked for. And the guys never seem to understand that she will show them to all of her girlfriends
yes.
and her gay friends.
That's exactly right.
And then just to disturb people, her straight friends.
Sabrina.
If you send it to her Saturday night, Sunday brunch, the dick is making the round.
Sabrina
at the
Cognato,
window.
Her message to the folks out there at decoupage.com is send a dick, any dick, and it will be put on the table. You can find her on Twitter at Sabrina C, that's Sabrina S-E-E, and at her website, SabrinaCognata.com, and of course, like I said, Decoupage.com. Wherever you are, folks, put your hands together for Sabrina Cognata.
My bio is a mishmash of bullshit that barely talks about anything I have ever achieved, because that's all bullshit. What you need to know about me is that I am dangerous. To be clear, I typed out dangerous in all caps because I want both of us to know that I am fucking serious. So listen very carefully when I explain who I am, what I'm about, and how worried we all should be that I've come into your life. I am the product of a life-threatening car crash that transformed me from introvert to unfiltered social force of nature due to the very literal smashing of the part of the human brain which governs self-restraint. I've been described elsewhere as the ideal candidate should Vice ever need an editor for their revenge department. Essentially, I am what would happen if you tried to clone Zelda Fitzgerald and filled in all the genetic gaps Jurassic Park style with Betty Davis's shoutiest characters. In other words, I hope we all become friends because the alternative is a living fucking nightmare. The problem is that most people don't know this about me. Most people don't even think to worry that I'm even important enough to respect, let alone fear. That's because I am a bad body woman with big sad eyes, wide-set hips, and heaving breasts big enough to end world hunger by making Russ Meyer's drool like Pavlov's dog. In short, I don't look threatening as much as I look like a good time, which I also am. But I'm getting ahead of myself here. This is a tale of bodily fluids. This is a tale about the spectacle of the human body and its secretions. This isn't a tale for the faint of heart. I have a lot of great stories about barfing on the hoods of cars, pissing in the ventilation ducts of cars, on Sea-Doos, on patio furniture, in bathroom sinks, in kitchen sinks, and one time on a sweatshirt I stuffed underneath the passenger seat of a dickhead's car in the dead of summer. I also have a great story about a horrible moment when popping a squat in an alley, thinking I'm going to pee, and then suddenly a little poo comes out. But this isn't a story about any of these things. This one's better. And this is an epic tale of human discharge. I was having a bad day, or maybe it was a bad life, when a text popped up on my phone and said, come over. It was my friend Jana. She'd recently given scabies to our friend Pam and had been socially banished from our circle of friends because scabies. But she swore she'd gotten treatment for it, and anyways, she is at a party, and I simply had to be there. In short, Jana's singing my culling song. So I was already closing my tab at a bar in Hollywood by the time I responded with, sure, where to? I get there, and it wasn't so much a party as it was my friend obliterated at a dude's house. There was literally four people, and everyone was wasted but me. It's a small one-bedroom apartment on the beach in Redondo with my friend Jana, the guy she was staying with, John, his girlfriend, and a couple of people who also lived in the apartment complex. Immediately, I knew things were fucked, but I didn't want to put a damper on my good time. Jana gets up off the sofa to hug me, but instead of walking towards me, she does a sort of sideways crab walk, then gives up, sits back down, and stares right through me, possibly into another dimension. Which is fine with me, because after a second of sitting there, she stares straight through me some more and asks, hey, do you want some pills? And of course, I said what any rational human being would say, fuck yes. I put out my paw, and she pours some pills in there, and I look at her, and she looks through me some more, and I say, well, this is certainly about to get fucking interesting. And I just take them. I don't even bother to ask what they are, because it doesn't matter. It just doesn't. In my history of partying, which is extensive to say the least, it's never mattered. There's never been a scenario where I ask what the pills are, and the answer makes me a better person. I don't want to be a better person. That's why I'm taking mystery pills. As I pop these pills into my mouth, Jana leans over, looks right through me again, and hands me a bottle of vodka to wash the pills down with. Now, like Jesus, or maybe more like the Queen of England, I put my hand up and wave as if to reject her offer. Because eventually, I have to drive all the way back to Hollywood, and booze is not going to make this trip easy or safe. But then John butts in and says, what are you, a girl? Which I realize means nothing, but it pisses me off nonetheless. So I swipe the bottle from Jana's hands and chug it. Fuck you, John. I'll show you just how much of a woman I am when I drink way more of this shit than necessary. Maybe a sip, possibly a quarter of the bottle, because that's what a woman would do. I look around, smug as fuck, at all four of the members of my audience when Jana gets up off the couch and shoots for the fucking moon. She looks beyond me into the ether and says, I think I'll be fine if you just take me out to the pool and let me get some air. Maybe put my feet in the water. At least that's what I think she says, because at this point, she's viciously slurring and barely able to walk. But since the pills and the booze haven't hit me yet, I feel like I can handle her. Help her out of the apartment, down to the pool, and into my very own living nightmare. At least twice, she sits down and tells me to leave her, once in a hallway and once in an elevator. Now, I'm a ride-or-die sort of bitch, so I won't give up, and I drag her ass outside into the pool. Here, Jana is revived by the Holy Spirit or possibly the ocean air and darts for the jacuzzi. And as I begin to panic, I hear a voice behind me. It's John. He emerges from the black of night like an angel of mercy or perhaps death. He says he figures I'd need help, and I think to myself, what a good guy. Then I'm snapped back to reality when I hear the faint sound of Jana drowning. She's sitting in the spa, bouncing over left and right like a buoy, and sort of just leaning there until enough water is going in and out of her mouth that I'm worried. I lunge towards the water, grab her by her hair, sit her up and tell her, not on my watch, bitch. You do not die on my watch. And I maybe might have slapped her in the face a little to snap her ass out of it. I'm wearing a short blue sundress with white polka dots. My legs are dangling in the water now, and every now and then, I stop paying attention to Jana, and I can hear the faint bubbling of a fountain. That's her drowning. So, of course, I pick her up by her hair again, and again, and again, and again. Relax, I'm not going to let her die. I'm just going to amuse myself. The second I feel like I have things under control and am talking to John, Jana is stricken with the Holy Spirit once more. She shoots up out of the hot tub and says she needs to jump into the pool. And I'm not worried about this because now I am sort of wasted. Because of this, I totally underestimate her dexterity based on her level of inebriation. In one fell swoop, she's out of the spa and into the pool, and so am I, and so is John. We stop her from drowning and drag her ass to the side of the pool like we're on a rescue mission. He hops out, helps me get her out of the water, And when we're done, I look at no one in particular and say, fuck, this is getting very stressful. At this point, Jana is completely lifeless. I hope that John will pick her up and carry her inside, but he thinks we should drag her, Call of Duty style, back into the elevator, down the hall, and into his apartment. Her feet are fucking dangling now, and we're all dripping wet. I look at him and say, well, it was a blast coming to Redondo Beach. As we carry her lifeless corpse inside, I realize everything I'd done earlier is hitting me at once. Now I want to turn around, get back in the spa, and kill myself like I'm Jana. But I don't, because you gotta be there for your friends. We get Jana back into the apartment and onto the couch. I remind him to put her on her side, so if she barfs, she won't John Bonham it, and he gives me a thumbs up. I pause and consider leaving, but then tell him, fuck man, these pills are really hitting me hard. I think I'm gonna take a nap on the floor and then head out later. Jana's off in La La Land on the sofa. John's girlfriend heads to the bedroom. John heads to the bedroom. And before I know it, I am floating away to the place where dreams are made, because I know if I sleep for an hour or two, I'll be better off to drive. A short while later, in that dream state where you're on drugs and your consciousness is visiting Bill and Ted and their excellent adventure, my body starts waking up, screaming, wake up, you stupid dumb bitch! Wake up! Wake up! Wake up! And I'm half in a dream state, half out of a dream state, and totally, totally fucked. Because it feels like someone is putting their hands up my skirt and rubbing aggressively on my haunches. But I'm still not quite awake, and even though the inside of my head is screaming, get up, bitch, now is the time, bad things are about to happen, what the fuck, what the fuck, what the fuck is going on? And then I wake up, finally. But that's when I realize that the shadowy figure rubbing up my haunches is now on top of me. The shadowy figure is John. My dress is pulled up and I can feel his fingers as they attempt to penetrate me. Relax, this gets better. Inside my head, I'm screaming, get up, run, get up. But I am slow to move. And then I brace myself for the worst imaginable outcome. John tugs at my tampon string and his fucking arm recoils out of disgust, because even though he's a fucking rapist, he's too good for the bleeding mess that's my body. Finally, I sit up and say to him, what the fuck did you just do? And he looks down at me, standing now, and says, shh, go back to sleep. Like a moron or a child. Perhaps both. Then he turns around, walks back into his bedroom, and disappears behind the safety of his closed door. What he doesn't know is that I am a nightmare person, and I'm on drugs, and I'm bringing the insanity. I sit on the floor in the dark for a second, thinking to myself, there's no fucking way he is going to get away with this. Fuck this, fuck him, fuck it all. So I get up and walk to the bathroom, and on the way, I can feel how he sort of dislodged a tampon when he pulled out the string. So I pulled a little more until it comes all the way out, and it's soaked with blood, my blood, the blood of my people, and I start swinging it around so that blood will splatter on everything in the hallway, and I realize I'm going to leave the crime scene of Dexter's wet dreams. I walk into the fucking bathroom and I look at all his stuff, and then I take out my bloody tampon, this disgusting fucking bloody tampon, and I rub it on everything, on the towels and on the toilet and on the rugs, on the shit behind the rugs, on the mirror. I rub it in real hard, looks real fucking dramatic, like I left a message in Aramaic, because if there was a time to scribble in Aramaic, this is it. I do this as if to send a message, and the message is clearly, don't fuck with me, asshole. And then when I'm done, I flush my used tampon on the toilet, open underneath the sink, take out a fresh tampon, because contrary to popular belief, I am not a fucking savage, put it in, slink away into the night like the bad dream that I am. What I learned from that, and what John and his girlfriend probably also learned that night, is what you need isn't always right, but sometimes it's exactly what you need right then. That is bodily fluids.
Wow, Sabrina, that's a strong story, man. Now, when I first saw you as a storyteller, I had the same reaction as I'm having now. It's not that I'm in shock, but you have a sense of honesty about you that really comes through. Like, because at some point I think, well, maybe there's anger coming out of this girl. Maybe it's anger. But then I don't think it is anger.
I mean, I can get angry. Nobody wants that. I can get angry easily. I'm very good at it. But I think the real thing is that I don't have time to give a shit what you think. This is my only shot at this life right now. Like, go caution to the wind. Yeah. Like, you run out of money, you can always make more. You run out of time, you can't.
Right. I understand these things. However, the danger part of it, you know, because like when you're going through your story, I'm thinking to myself, like, the name of this episode is Bodily Fluids, and I'm not hearing bodily fluids. Well, then, clearly, the bodily fluids start seeping in, and I definitely heard that. But at first, I was thinking, like, this story should be called A Night of Debauchery. Or this story should be called, you know, a possible drowning.
Revenge 101.
It was perfectly named, I'm going to say.
It is perfectly named now that I think of it. But, like, you put yourself in that position.
I love putting myself in that position.
And so what about this girl, though? I mean, I'm disturbed that you were letting her go under the water again and again in the hot tub.
She was a fucking nightmare person, too. That's why I let that happen.
I know, but, like, didn't you think, like...
Nobody dies on my watch. I've been partying for a good long time, and I don't party like a normal person. I party like Charlie Sheen on Quaaludes.
But could she not have maybe taken her out of the water? You know what I mean?
She wanted to be in the fucking water. Sometimes you give people what they want, and then they stop wanting it. Like when she was like, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to be dead now.
Yeah. Well, I was glad when you leaned her on her side, because you mentioned, you know, you could easily choke on your own vomit like Jimi Hendrix.
I mean...
Happens all the time.
I've been there. Been there in a personal way, but it's like, you have to understand that I'm not scared.
Right.
That is what it is. People are like, oh, you're attracted to danger. I'm like, no, I'm just not scared.
Now, this is interesting because you almost died because you had a very, very serious car crash. Before the car crash, you didn't drink alcohol.
I was a boring ass nerd.
You were like a really timid, just a regular person.
Yeah.
And you are the oldest of six.
Yes.
By the way, I'm the youngest of six.
Oh, that
so
makes sense.
We have something going on here. No, but the oldest of six, you're a bit of a leader, I would think.
Forced to be mature before your time, I assume.
It made me very good at people. It's why I was like, I didn't quite trust John, but like I knew I couldn't trust Jana, but it was like, I didn't go over there because I wanted to fucking do macrame and like dick around and then go to sleep like, you know, regular human being. I went over there because I wanted to have a party. I wanted things to go crazy. Like,
and it got that way.
I like for shit to spin out of control.
And it got that way.
Of course it did.
But it didn't. You weren't this way before the car crash.
No, I would have been like, that sounds dangerous.
Yeah.
That sounds
so
dangerous.
So what do you think it is? And I'd like you to, if you don't mind, talking about the car crash a little bit, because it's truly the most terrifying. I can't believe you lived through this experience. And I want to know what you think jogged or what happened in your psyche. In other words, like, was it just like, I survived death, so now fuck everything?
When I was 19, I broke my neck, and then I broke my life. And when you're at that age, it's like where you're learning who you are as a person. And what I learned is that 19-year-olds are shitty people, because after I got home from the hospital, all my friends were like, dude, we don't want to come see you. You're a fucking bummer. You look like a bummer. You act like a bummer. You're a fucking bummer.
But let's go back to the accident, if you don't mind.
I broke my neck in four places. I fractured the base of my skull. I lost all the feeling in my right arm. I pinched the ulnar nerve.
But what was the accident proper? You're going down the 405.
We were going down the 405.
Who's driving?
A friend of mine. Honestly, it was a freak accident. We were in the fast lane, and the car lost control, and it spun out. I don't remember any of this, so I'm just—you're asking me questions, but I'm just going to spout facts.
Oh, okay. Sure,
I understand. I remember just driving down the freeway, and then I don't remember anything
until you woke up in the hospital.
I remember waking up in the hospital. My mom was standing on top of me, like above me, not on top of me. She wasn't going to rape me too. But she was standing above me, and I remember looking at her, and she was crying, and I was like, relax, I still have all my teeth.
Could you feel your teeth?
Yeah, well, I could feel the dirt in them, because when we spun out of control, we sideswiped another car, we spun out of control, and then we went from the fast lane to
the curb or the
embankment
side,
or whatever, where the dirt is over there, because it's between Getty and Skirball, kind of.
Sure, on the 405.
And, right, where all the worst, horrible accidents happen. And we flipped over a couple of times, and the car landed upside down.
Were you ejected from the vehicle?
I was wearing my seatbelt, so I wasn't ejected, but the crown of my head went through the windshield, so blood was everywhere. And my sister was in the back seat, and she was totally fine.
Really?
And she says she got out and looked at the driver, and the driver, her arm was trapped underneath the car, and my sister, she was like... She kept crying, and I looked at her and was like, shut the fuck up. You just murdered my sister. Because I was like, I was not in a good way.
Wait, you thought.
No, oh, your sister
my
said
sister
this
did.
To the
I
driver.
Saying, right.
I see.
And.
So your mouth had dirt in it.
Right. When I woke up in the hospital. Right. Because my sister was just like, this shit was everywhere.
Yeah.
I'll never forget this. The song that was fucking playing when we crashed a car was fucking NSYNC's Bye Bye Bye. And I was like, yeah, that's really how I get to
fucking
go.
You don't
want to
go that way. That's a bad
really
way to go.
That's really how I get to go. I know. They're like, give her ass a second chance. Don't let it be like this.
Got to be at least the Beatles.
But like, the thing is, I the first year or so was really just like recuperating. It was like a
whole
year.
You were in a body
year.
Cast?
I was in a body brace, which it got like hooks for over your shoulders, and there's like a body plate that goes like in between your breast, and then it comes underneath your breast, and then there's like hooks that come from over your shoulder, and they latch together, and then a big metal bar comes up from the chest plate to your chin, and then there's a little piece of metal that you rest your chin on for like 7 months, and it was...
That is so sad. I swear to God, you explaining that could make me cry right now.
It's really... Well, it was...
That is so traumatic, Sabrina.
Well, that's the thing. I'm like, regular people are afraid of shit because everybody is taught to avoid fucked up stuff. I'm like, I can't avoid it. I have to fucking run it. Like, I am a person where weird shit is happening constantly, and I'm okay with that, and I enjoy it, and I invite it. But, like, even when I wasn't inviting it, that kind of weird shit was happening. So now I'm just like, look... If it's going to get fucked up, I better be in charge. Like,
yeah,
I don't
that
want
makes sense.
Anybody
like, I
else
at least
in charge.
Want to control because
the chaos.
You're not under the illusion that most people are under, which is that, like, well, if I remain calm, everything will be fine and terrible things can't happen to me. You're
no.
well aware that terrible things can happen to you out of nowhere.
Fucked up stuff happens all the time. Like, when I broke my neck, I made $1 million. And you know what? I spent every fucking cent of it.
I partied. I went on vacations.
What
do you mean by you made $1 million?
We sued like, a bunch of people because, you know, I was a passenger.
No, who did you sue?
I'm not at liberty to say. But it's all closed filed. Like, I can't say. But, like, I sued everybody that I could sue. And I made, like, $1 million. I was, like, 20 years old. I had all this fucking money. And... Like, my parents tried to, like, dictate what I could do with it, but it turns out you couldn't dictate what I could do. After, like, the first year of having the money, I was very conservative with it. And then I just realized I'll be dead someday. Maybe not today and maybe not tomorrow, but you can't take the money with you. And if you don't really enjoy it, like, these old people who don't enjoy their money and then they drop dead, I wasn't going to be one of them. So then I just fucking got in a rocket to Partyville and I never turned back.
But Sabrina, you must have sued a car company. You must have sued a seatbelt company.
I sued a lot of people.
We can speculate. She can't confirm.
Okay. But wait a minute. Your parents are in your life. Your parents are with you.
Oh, yeah. I had to like, live in my parents' house because I couldn't take care of myself.
Somebody had to care for you.
They had to move a hospital bed in. Like, I remember when I first got back home, I really pushed to get out of the hospital very quickly. Like, I'm going to be fine. And I was not going to be fine. Because when they had to sew up my – there was a 6-inch cut on the top of my head. And it was jagged because I'd hit the windshield. So they had to shave – a bald spot on the top of my head, but because the cut was on the right side of my head, it was like somebody got drunk and gave Friar Tuck his haircut, so it was like a big hole on the side. But my mom, who's a fucking, bless her heart, she's like, just wear hats, because my hair was like really long at the time, was down to my ass. She was like, nobody will be able to tell, you can comb it over. So I was like 19 with like $1 million and a fucking comb over. I was having my midlife crisis.
How
like,
old was your mom? If you were 19, she was how old?
Young. I mean, she
like
was 49,
50. I'm just curious.
Probably early 40s.
I cannot imagine as a mother and then that happening. And she says she's got 5 more kids at home. She's got 6 kids.
No, she had four more kids at home.
Four more kids at
no,
home.
No, did she have? Wait. No, she did. She did have 5 more kids
so
at home.
So she's
sorry.
Got 6 kids. One of them has just had a traumatic accident.
My mom is a tough ass bitch.
She sounds
She comes from
amazing.
Her own place of trauma. So yeah. Like, maybe it's like 2 dashes of the fact that she's like, we don't get upset and we don't freak out. We just deal with things as they happen.
But didn't, I'm just wondering, didn't anybody give you any guidance to do with this money? Didn't anybody say, I mean, I understand that it's hard.
They put it away in some like weird shit.
Mutual funds, et cetera.
Right. And it turns out I'm like over 18, so I could just sign it and be like, give me my fucking money.
I understand. But that's a lot of anger coming out of you. I mean, I'm just saying to talk to somebody reasonably to say,
no,
look, Sabrina.
I didn't care. Here's the thing. I didn't plan to, even before that accident, I really didn't plan to live that long. Then after that accident, I was like, hopefully I party so hard I die by 25.
Yeah.
And then I made it to 25. Yeah. Then I made it to 27. And then I made it to 30, and I was like, fuck, I might not die.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I hear what you're saying. I don't want you to die, like, hurting somebody else.
I mean, maybe if they deserve it, I'm okay with that.
But I don't want you to, you know, because, you know, I mean, whether you're doing drinking or driving or drugs or whatever, you know, on your own watch, that's fine. But you don't want anybody else to be involved, obviously.
Collateral damage is a cunt. It already happened to me. That's how I broke my neck. So the circle goes around.
Talk
and
about
I
debauchery. Yeah. I wonder if you got into another serious accident, if in fact you might revert
been.
Back.
I have been.
You have?
I was in another car crash like 2 or 3, maybe 3 or 4 years after I broke my neck, where a guy didn't see that when you, it looked like a freeway on ramp, but when you got, like, when you kind of went there, there was a stop, yeah, like a stop sign, and then you got on the freeway.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just floored his car.
And didn't stop. He kept moving.
He hit me and he, like, totaled my car.
It's the worst.
Trunk
terrifying.
Was in the back seat.
Terrifying.
But that's why I'm like, it doesn't matter.
It does happen. If no, no,
timed,
I understand.
If your card's up, if it's time to punch in and punch out, then mm-hmm. it just is what it is.
I hear you. I hear you. But I also want you to live a long, productive life.
I mean, I don't really feel like I have a choice. I don't feel like it's my choice at
okay.
this point.
Do
I feel
you
like
have
I'm
dreams?
Stuck.
Do you have dreams?
I'm a day-to-day person.
Okay. So do you see yourself living, because you are from California, you're from Los Angeles, you're living in Los Angeles. Would you like to stay in Los Angeles?
I'm probably never leaving Los Angeles.
Yeah, I love LA.
I don't have, what's the point?
I don't know.
Like, I've been to other places.
I say that too.
I'm like, listen, when I fuck a 7 here, it's a 10 somewhere else, okay? Like, fuck that shit. I don't want to go to your ugly state filled with your ugly people and fuck an ugly 5 because it's actually an ugly person.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, I wasn't thinking of that. I was thinking about the weather and the opportunities.
I mean,
because you are a writer and you're a very smart person. I know you went to Cal State Northridge. I know you graduated college in 3 years.
Right.
So when you want to put all of this energy, you are a ball of energy. When you focus it to good, as it were, you accomplish.
That's right. Yeah, well, nobody has as many dick pics on their blog. No. Yes. No.
No, but I'm just saying that you, but you are, you've been a digital content manager at CBS.
I hate being in an office, and I hate
understand
people, and
you
I don't
didn't like
deal
that.
With them
I understand, but I'm just saying you've
it
had
all sounds
some,
reasonable
some successes.
To me.
What this sounds like is like the mom I should have, but I don't, because my mom's like, I don't know what to tell you to do anymore. I'm like, I don't want to hear you talk anymore, so let's just not.
What are you sounding? Like, are you saying
this,
I sound like
a
your
better
mother?
Advice.
Like the mom
no.
she should have.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I love my mother, but she's not good at this sort of thing. She's like,
so am I now your surrogate mother?
You're momming me right now. I have another friend who does
I
this.
I could be your mother because I'm 50 years old, and if I had a kid at 15 or whatever, that's you, because you're 34, 35.
I'm going to be 34 next week.
See what I mean? You could be my kid. So I love you. I really do, Sabrina. I'm telling you, when you did my show, the live show, I had a connection with you right away because you've got a lot of great energy, but then there's also this terror that comes out, and I want you to live a long, strong life. So what about like the writing that you do? Can you focus that? Do you try to put that into a place?
I went to journalism school, so I'm like, I'll be a journalist. And then I ended up a music journalist, and I fucking hated that.
Really?
Yeah, because here's the thing. Yeah, there's cool shit. Like, you get to hang out with rock stars and shit. But then it's like, hey, we need you to, like, do all your regular job during the week. And also, you don't get any days off because then you have to cover yeah. concerts on the weekend. So then you end up working, like, 60, 70 days in a row. And by then, I was just like, I'm not, like, a regular person either. It was like, in my office, I had a full bar. And then, like, I would call up the promo kids and be like, hey, fuckers, you guys want to get high outside? It was just like the so many days in a row, no breaks. Like, I don't like going to meetings. I don't like dealing with other people in that way. Like, I don't like being told what to do. So it wasn't a positive environment. It was an environment where my dog died. And then I just realized there's only a significant amount of time before they can fire me. And a guy in sales had shown me his dick at a concert once. So I was just like, I'm going to stop doing work and see what they do when they come at me to fire me. And I'm like, I'm going to come at you with this guy's dick. Because everybody heard about it in the building. And even though I knew I would be a teller, and nobody likes teller because my boss told me that, he's like, you don't really want to do a sexual harassment thing.
You do if you're firing you.
Well, yeah. I let them try to back me up, and I left anyways. I didn't want to be there, but I really wanted to scare them back that I would do something about it. Does that make sense?
Well, it sort of does, except it just doesn't do it in a very an advantageous way.
That was like right before I had a nervous breakdown, so I was definitely crashing and burning.
Yeah,
but like I was a star exploding.
Yeah.
You know?
Are you on any medications to help with this? Because that could help. I'm just saying there's medications that can help kind of like just control the aggression.
It's not even the aggression. It's the impulse problem. But like,
the impulse problem. But interesting.
There's nothing I can do about that. That part of the brain is shattered.
I'm telling you right now you can.
Medications. Yeah, that's the question is you're saying that physically there was
brain damage.
Part of the brain that it controls impulse control. Okay.
So you would think there would be a doctor that would come medication. And then say, look, according to your accident,
also,
this is what has happened.
I don't care. Here's the thing.
But you do care, Sabrina, because here's something that ladies and gentlemen out there might not know about you, which I find almost the most fascinating thing about you, is that you are actually a caring and loving and responsible nanny.
Well, I am in charge. That's why I like doing it. a child can't talk back to you and be like, hey, can you go to this meeting? And also that shit I told you to do earlier, scrap that. David from New York's here. They can't say anything. I'm like, I am in charge. You have to listen.
But you have to get all their stuff together, what they're going to need for the day.
Yeah, but I'm a highly intuitive person. So, like, I don't have to talk to somebody. Like, I could sit in this room with you guys and without saying a word, let you know how I feel and how you should react.
Right, but what does that have to do with raising, with caring for children?
Because that's a lot of what taking care of people.
Oh, I see. You're saying for children, you're intuitive as to what they're going to need.
We're not going to have an argument. I know exactly where you're going with this.
Yeah.
I know what you want. I'm going to tell you can or can't have it, and it's not up for discussion.
I see.
Like, I can get my point across without using as much words as the child.
So the parents that you watch their children, is it one family?
Yes. And there's a few, but like...
They know you, obviously, and they know you.
Right.
And did they ever hear this side of you, the aggression part, or did they just realize, like, no, she's good at this?
I'm just good at it. So
I bet you
care.
Are. Yeah, I bet you are.
Look, somebody has to take care of little people. Like, mm-hmm. That's something that fucking really pisses me off is when people are mean to animals or children or people who are weak. Like, that's when the chick who takes her tampon out is going to come visit.
Yeah, I know.
Like, because most of the time, I just want to be stoned and left the fuck alone. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk to you, strange person coming at me who I know is going to ask me a question. I don't want to talk to you at all. I don't even care that you're alive. Like,
But you're a comedian and you go on stage. And you give the audience what they want. They want to laugh. You meet their needs. I mean, you do that.
Yeah, but I'm good at that. I know.
But you're giving. I'm just saying. You come across as if you're not going to give and you don't care, but you do.
I'll give you that. But also, being on stage is a selfish act. You might be giving somebody something, but you're taking.
She's giving somebody what she wants to give them. She's not.
I can walk
singing
into the
a
room,
song from
right.
20 years ago that she hates, but she has to sing it because it was her only hit.
It's the calling song I sing to the audience. Like, I can walk into a room and feel the room's energy, and like it could be different every time. I'll always be an explosive performer.
Okay,
but like I can change a story when I'm on stage when I feel what people are getting into. I can start changing things because a lot of what I do is improv. Like, that's why I don't really care to read a story.
Yeah,
I live that shit.
Do you ever go after an audience member in an assaulting attack mode?
No, I don't fucking care that much.
I'm so glad you don't, because I'll tell you something. I've been hanging out at the Comedy Store a little bit, and in the original room, Hannes, you back me up on this.
Yeah.
In the OR, I have seen years ago, I saw Dice Clay walk everybody except for maybe three people. Like, it was a big joke for the comedian to be on stage and just to hurt somebody in a verbal attack and assault the audience until they all walk out. And I hate that.
I don't think that's funny personally. It could be funny to other people. But for me, I am a narcissist. And my story is going to be better than talking to you about whatever sad, sorry, sack of shit thing is your thing.
I see.
You know what I mean? Like,
so
that's
you
giving
don't pull
you
the
credence.
Audience in.
No, that's giving somebody a lot of credit to, like, take them and take them aside.
And give
if
their,
you don't like
time.
It, get the fuck out and go. I don't fucking care.
I see.
I'm going to keep telling my story. Because if you've seen me perform, right. There's never, like, a break where I'm, like, pausing to care if somebody's laughing. I'm like a fucking freight train.
You are a freight train. And listen, I know you got to go, so I want to wrap this up. But I want to ask you a little bit about Decoupage and how long you've been doing decoupage.com.
I came up with the idea a couple years ago when I was like fucking around with some friends, and like we did something and my coffee table is like bright red, like enamel bright red, and it got scratched, right? It's very sexy. It's very like 70s chic, let's do drugs on it. And it's scratched, and I was like, oh, that sucks. I should just fucking tape a bunch of dicks on it. That would be fucking funny. And my friend's like, no, you could decoupage dicks on it. And I'm like, decoupage.
Interesting.
And she's like, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But then, like, most things, I just, like, kind of let it go to the wayside. And I don't remember what happened. Earlier this year, I think I was at a bar or something, and when I came back to my car, there was, like, a fucking horrible note that was just like, you're a fucking bitch. You think you're a better person than you are. And I'm like, oh, I must have been flirting with somebody's boyfriend and still not giving a shit. But I'd, like, taken a photo of the note and put it on, like, Instagram or Facebook or something, and a friend of mine was, like, texting me over it, and somehow I was like, yeah, I should have asked the motherfucker for dick pics. And that, like, morphed into me explaining to him what decoupage was for whatever reason. I'm not really for sure how it happened. And he's like, no, you're stupid. You should do that right now, like, right this second.
That's a good idea.
Original idea I've heard in a long time. And I was like, okay. And like a day I pulled it together and I was like, oh wait, this is a platform to tell men how stupid they are constantly. I love this.
So now there's up to 30 pictures up there now.
Yeah, I have a ton of pictures. Just like,
why
but
do you
not
wanna...
just the pictures, there's a long commentary that goes with each picture.
Or a poem or a short story or an essay or whatever the fuck it is. I did a bunch of poems one time, I think limericks or haikus or something, about this guy who would do super weird stuff and we'd have sex. He'd be like, they're so weird. But like, whatever. It's just like in my head, whatever I'm thinking about is what I write.
Because it seems like you got a real anger toward men as well.
Men are pretty shitty to women.
I don't know. I've had a lot of really good men.
I've had a lot of fucking horrible men.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I like horrible people, but like I give them boundaries. And I'm like, look, you're horrible. I love you, but you have to keep it, stay back. I mean, like,
I just don't
look,
know,
I'm not a conventional person. Like, whatever, I don't know what people want, but I don't want that. I'm not for sure I want the house and the picket fence and the kids or any of that shit. Like, I'm totally fine with, like, going away into a fucking lighthouse and disappearing forever.
No, you're not. I just asked you before about Los Angeles, and you said, I'm never going
to
leave here.
But not in, like, the sense of, like, going to the ocean, but, like, you know, just...
But you need it. You need interaction. You need people. You need interaction. You love your family.
I need interaction less than I need interaction.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think as a person who is for less interaction, I totally know where she's coming from.
All right.
I mean, Christine, you need a tremendous amount of interaction with people.
I'm so needy. It's terrible.
It's not a matter of being needy. That's what you like, interaction with people. Sabrina and I are on the other side of the fence. We can go a week. I'm guessing you could go a week without speaking to another person, and you'd be totally fine.
I totally could. I had a roommate. I had a roommate once.
This makes perfect sense to me. I'm completely. Nothing about this is weird to me.
I had a roommate once, and she like worked days, and at the time I was like freelancing, so I would just write whenever the fuck I wanted to, and all day long when she would like be at work, I would just sit in the apartment silent and I wouldn't say a word to anybody. And if I could get through 8 hours without saying a word to anybody, I felt like it was a successful day. And we had a fight one time and she was like, I don't understand why you're doing this. I don't understand, like, you
And you said, what do you care?
Well, no, what I was like is like, you're fucking crazy. Don't you understand that all day long I don't have to talk to anybody, and I love that. So if I don't want to, if I come home and I don't want to talk to you, because I don't fucking want to talk to you, because that's talking to people all day long.
Do you live by yourself now?
No, I live with my sister now.
Oh, how's your sister?
She's crazy.
And how many boys and girls in your family?
There's four girls and two boys.
Yeah, we have five girls, one boy. And your sister, what does she do for a living?
She takes care of children with behavioral problems.
Interesting. Oh wow, that's a lot of patience.
You know what? Here's the thing. I'm an incredibly patient person. I just wait for you to do something. I wait for people to do something that they can't take back, and then I destroy their life. That is my go-to. I'm just like, I'm going to give you all the leeway in the world. I am forgiving as fuck. But if you cross a line that I can't deal with, I'm going to put into effect whatever plan I've come up with to destroy everything about your life.
You make me laugh, man. You really do.
That's so crazy I should.
Hey, listen, you want to play some Shotgun Story,
Let's
brother?
Let's do this.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
The beach. Oh, here's a good one. When I turned 25, I had a birthday party and I had it in like Hollywood, and we were driving back. We were going to Malibu for whatever reason, and we stopped at the Ralph's in Malibu and we saw these surfers, me and my friend, and the guy was like, hey, we're going to a party, you should come with us. And when we were walking back to the car, he's like, we should switch people. So I went in the car with the one dude and my friend with the other dude, and he's like, you want to see something cool? And I always say yes whenever anybody wants to show me something. So we like come up to like the Topanga tide pools, and we pull, he opens a gate, we pull, like start driving onto the sand, and we pull up to a fucking lifeguard tower, and he's like, you want to see inside there? And I knew that meant we're gonna fuck in there, but I was like, yeah, sure, show me, please fucking show me this. And we go inside and we bang it out, and then we told that like very 25 year old sex where you're just like, cool, should we go back to the party now? So we go to this party and we get there, and this fucking beautiful blonde 7-foot-tall Adonis was there, and I was like, fuck, I fucked the wrong person again. No, that's the story of my 25th birthday.
Wow, that's a good story on the beach. I've never done that in a lifeguard station. Was it dark?
No, he opened the inside, like, so you could see all the water.
He's not an animal.
No, he was. I mean, he was a savage, but not an animal.
Was that your friend's boyfriend, though? No.
It was just, no, that was a lifeguard that my brother hated.
Oh, right. So that was good.
That was fun. I mean, like, I remember I brought his name up once. He's like, that guy's a dick. And I was like, I'm just never going to bring him up again.
And it's interesting, though, you got to that party, you see somebody who else you might like to sleep with, and that's where you drew the line? I'm surprised you didn't.
I mean, if I'm going to do a 2 and 24, I'm not going to let them know each other. Like,
a 2 and 24.
Two people in 24 hours. Yeah, yeah. If you're going to do a 2 in 24, don't let the two people know it.
Hey, listen, man, I really appreciate you coming today.
Thank you so much.
And I'm sorry for the little bit of a delay there. That's fine. Sorry about that. All right, you guys, we got to wrap it up right about now. I want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Andrew Steven on sound. And he does such a good job, Hannes. And I know this because I hear myself.
Yes, yes.
Do you know what I mean? That's all about the sound.
I know it because he's never sent me a dick pic. Therefore, I figure he's a hardworking person.
I'd also like to thank Sean Merrick and Roddy Swearingen, and of course, John Thomas Griffith. You know,
he has sent me a dick pic.
He's the guy that wrote our theme song, Follow Me.
Yeah, and then he took a picture of his dick. No, he showed the sheet music, he laid his dick on it, and then he sent a picture.
And, of course, on behalf of our storyteller tonight, Sabrina Cognata, thank you again for coming.
Thank you.
And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.